How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 20 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Greg Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head out to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast. You can search any of the other corresponding names, Locked On Heat or Locked On Bulls or whatever it is, and subscribe to those as well. You can leave a review there if you'd like. Another good guest today, I would say probably one of the 10 or 12 best Thunder beat writers in all of Oklahoma City.
I'm in the top 10. I'm pushing it. Pushing the top 10?
Yeah, I think there's a clear argument for Royce Young to be in the top 10. Yeah.
I'm trying to I got a big season ahead. That's really what it is. It's a contract year for me. I need to put something together and try to crack that top 10.
How are you going to prove your worth? That's the real question.
Really, it's about how many shoes I sell. And right now I'm not selling many shoes.
No, that's a big deal. Oh my gosh. What shoe company would you be on with? Like, would you like bring back New Balance?
Birkenstocks. I don't know. I wear a pair of Timberlands, like Timberland dress shoes, like to death. Like when it's like time to be fancy pantsy, I put on my Timberlands and I get out there. So I would be the first Timberland basketball player.
I would totally bring back New Balance. That would 100. I think
Matt, Does Matt Bonner still wear those?
Well, I'm not sure if he wore them this year. I know they stopped making basketball shoes, and then Matt Bonner still wanted to continue wearing them, so they actually specially made basketball shoes for Matt Bonner.
No, what they did, Fred, is they sold their designs to Under Armour for Steph Curry. That's what happened.
Is that actually what happened?
No, I'm making that up because those Steph Curry's are so hideous, and they look like dad's New Balance shoes. But it was believable. It was somewhat believable, wasn't it?
That was somewhat believable. Yeah, those white ones are ugly. Honestly, I got water hosed in the park about 5 months ago by a 12-year-old kid. So I don't think I have.
What were you wearing?
Well, I wasn't wearing basketball shoes. In my defense, I was wearing, what are they called? Walk-ons or walk-offs?
What are those? What are those?
Like, they're like kind of like a felty, like semi dress shoe, like something you can wear with like a dress pant or a dress jean or like a jean or something like that. But I was like out with friends and we were walking by the park and they were going to play and I wasn't going to play and they convinced me to play. So I was like, fine, but I'm not wearing anything. I was wearing like chinos and those. So I was playing and a 12-year-old kid came up to me and what are those to me? It was not my proudest moment ever.
Well, it happens. I mean, I guess you can live with yourself. I'm going to start water-thosing people that are barefoot.
Well, I have really big feet, so I look strange barefoot. So you can get me with that.
Yeah.
I have uncomfortably wide feet.
Well, I can't wait to see you barefoot and I'm going to water-those you.
Yeah, we'll see what scenario you do see me barefoot. That'll be the more interesting part of all.
When we're all lounging around the media pool at the practice facility. Yeah.
On casual Friday at the
Fenway. The casual Friday, we all hang out. We do our interviews right there by the pool.
So how's your offseason going? What are you up to at this point?
Things have calmed down nicely. Starting to reacquaint myself with my family a little bit. I talked to my wife and child a little bit yesterday, which was nice. No, I actually played golf today. That's really what it's about at this point for me is that just trying to kind of wind it down, recuperate yourself a little bit, lick your wounds, and get ready to. Here's the thing about the NBA offseason, Fred, and you know this all too well. People think like, oh, what the offseason's so great, like, or the season's over. Now what do you do? It's like, well, now free agency starts, and that's seriously like 2 to 3 weeks, maybe sometimes a month, of like the most intense reporting you can possibly do. So like, you know, going to games, covering games, the travel, that stuff catches up with you pretty bad, but. You know, the consistent nights of like 2 hours of sleep and on edge at all times, where you can't even eat like a bowl of cereal at 10 o'clock at night without incessantly like having your phone next to you and like breathe like a normal person. Like that stuff kind of wears you down. So this is kind of a moment to pull back. But you know, this year we've got the Olympics, but then NBA training camp starts in like late September. So there's really like only about a month and a half of off season, I feel like, for an NBA writer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's honestly what it is for me more. The inconvenience is the toughest part. Like I was at dinner. Yeah. My girlfriend like genuinely hates Woj. Because
well, I can understand why. He's ruined many an anniversary and a night out and enjoyable evenings.
Yeah, you know, just like the other night, I was at dinner. I was just at dinner with a buddy, and you know, Dion the Thunder pulled back the qualifying offer to Dion, so I had to run home and write about that. And it's not the amount of work; like that doesn't take a long time to do. That's a pretty short amount of work, but it's the inconvenience, you know.
Being called to work at
10:30 when you're out to dinner with a friend.
That's kind of the thing that I don't think not we are so inside baseball right now that every single person in the world has been like turning this off. but it is true that is kind of the thing people don't realize, that the job we have is an amazing job, and there's a lot of freedom to kind of roll your own way and do your own thing and kind of create your own hours in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you're essentially working 24 hours a day. Now you find time to sleep and you find time to eat and you find times to do other things. But like you said, Fred, at the drop of a hat, everything stops and you go to work, and you kind of have to be on edge at every moment. There's been many movies that I've got up and I've had to walk out of because I've gotten a text or a phone call or something. You know, there's been many times where I'm at dinner with my wife and important person is calling me and I'm like, I gotta go step outside, and then I'm on the phone for 45 minutes. So that type of stuff kind of wears you out.
Shouts
out to Carrie Young, wonderful, wonderful NBA writer wife.
So let's stop complaining about our jobs, because we have awesome jobs. So
it's a great job.
There are a lot of people with worse jobs out there. So let's actually talk about what I think people care about more. Let's talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Gotcha. Dion Waiters. Talk about your feet. Dion Waiters, go ahead.
Dion Waiters, you've heard of him. He is now an unrestricted free agent after the Thunder pulled back the qualifying offer to him earlier this week. I just want to know, what's your prediction with what happens with him? Because it doesn't seem like the Thunder are going to bring him back. They still hold his bird rights. They still haven't renounced him as a free agent yet, which means that they, you know, can still bring him back. His cap hold is still on the books. They just turned him into an unrestricted free agent, which kind of implies that you know, the interest isn't there. They wouldn't want him taking the qualifying offer, obviously, because they took it off the table. What's your prediction with what ends up happening with him? And if he is out the door, where do you think he ends up going?
I'm not going to say 0% chance that he's back with the Thunder, but like, let's say 1% chance. I mean, it is so unlikely that Dion Waiters returns to the Thunder unless nobody else out there decides to sign him. And he can come back to Oklahoma City, and he's just dying to come back to Oklahoma City on like the most bargain contract you've ever seen. But the reality is right now, Fred, is that, you know, cap space is precious to the Thunder. So, you know, before, if Kevin Durant would have re-signed, Dion Waiters, I think, was going to stay on this team, because, you know, at that point, the Thunder are well over the cap, and there's no process to building the roster at that point. There's no way you can go. I don't know if everybody can hear my child yelling at me right there. But there's no way to like really, you know, there's no function to build your roster other than re-sign the players that you have, or to make a trade with the players that you have. So now with Kevin Durant out the door, the function of the Thunder now is going to be to build, somewhat through cap space and flexibility, the way that they had gotten to this point. So, I think that Dion Waiters, the most likely scenario to me, is that the Thunder now rescinded that qualifying offer to make him unrestricted, so that Sam Presti can do what he loves to do, which is, when Dion Waiters signs a contract with the Brooklyn Nets or the Philadelphia 76ers, I kind of think he's going to sign with the 76ers personally. But when that happens, you can bank on it that Sam Presti is going to create a traded player exception and pull that off with a sign and trade.
Do you think that Dion Waiters going home will be good for him?
I go back and forth on that. And I think in some ways it could be really good for him, but he also strikes me as the type of player that could have a lot going on around him off the court. And, you know, I don't want to jump too much into his personal life, but, you know, we all know what happened with his brother in Philadelphia. And there's a lot of family stuff that he's going to have to deal with. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be around him. You know, he grew up in that area. There's going to be friends and cousins and people coming out of the woodwork. They're going to want a piece of him. And that's why people don't understand. You know, they make the assumption that these players just want to go home. But when you go home, you know, there is so much more distraction that now basketball takes a big back seat to your personal life. And you've got to kind of work things out. And I don't know if Dion Waiters wants to do that. You know, on the other hand, Fred, maybe he feels a pull back home because, you know, that's one of the things that he said after his brother tragically died was that he wishes he had been there. You know, he wishes he had been there to still be mentoring his younger brother. So maybe there's an aspect of that he feels like he needs to get closer to his family. But I think at the same time, it's going to be about, you know, what's the best option for him in terms of now playing time. And we've seen, kind of surprisingly so, his free agency value has dipped down, I think, far below what we all expected it to be. I mean, for the most part, I think we talked about it, Fred. You know, a lot of people were, you know, what is Dion Waiters going to get in this market? And most people expected him to get snapped up pretty early and get an offer sheet in the $15 to $18 million range. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen now. I feel like Dion Waiters is probably looking more at the $8 to $10 million range unless something changes from this point.
I will say, I'm going to pat myself on the back. I did somewhat see this coming.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, my really random preseason prediction, which is now incorrect because Dion's an unrestricted free agent, but my really random pre-offseason prediction was that Dion Waiters would be the last restricted free agent to sign a contract.
But that's an amazing prediction. Here's the thing. Like, I think that, you know, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong on this, Fred, but like, I feel like, you know, front office executives around the league right now, they're looking at Dion Waiters in two different prisms, and they're trying to wonder which guy that they're going to pay to bring in and how much money that guy's worth. The guy with the Thunder, who to me was an excellent role player and, you know, in some ways kind of was that 3-and-D guy, and he was playing alongside Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, and he had bought into his role and was wholly committed to that. Fine coming off the bench, really kind of sunk himself into the Thunder culture. You've got that guy, but then you've also got to say, is he going to still be that guy? Can he still step in and remain that type of player? Or is he going to kind of dissolve back into the, you know, early shot clock, step back 22 footer guy? And, I think there's a question that I think front office people are asking themselves right now is that, you know, which Dion Waiters am I signing right here? Is he a changed man or not? Because if he's not changed, then he's a low efficiency gunner. And I don't know if I want to go out and spend a bunch of money on him.
Well, part of the reason that I thought that was possible was because of kind of that kind of ponderance of which kind of Dion Waiters are you going to get, you know? And I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that question. I think part of it was also the reputation that he gained when he was in Cleveland. I mean, there were people that he didn't get along with in Cleveland, and he shed a lot of that with Oklahoma City from a personality standpoint.
Right.
I think he did a much better job. But I think just from talking to people around the league, there are people, whether they're people in the Dion Waiters sweepstakes or not, like there are people who have their concerns about, well, it was a contract year. You know, he was in a situation on a really good team with people that he liked. Is that something that we're going to see translate to every single scenario, or was it specific to now? I think it's also a case of, you know, Dion even said in exit interviews, like he explicitly said he wasn't sure if he would go to another team if it meant playing the same role.
Right.
He would be happy to come back to Oklahoma City and play an off-the-bench role.
And that might scare off teams.
Absolutely. I thought it was possible that it would. And I figured, you know, Dion, between that and the previous reputation, I just didn't think if he was going to take that mentality. It's one thing just to say it in a press conference. But if he was actually going to take that mentality into free agency and let that dictate his negotiations and where he'd want to go, where he'd want to sign, I just figured that would have some sort of effect on the way that his negotiations would go. I still think he's going to get in like the 8 to 12 million range because we see restricted free agents, or in this case, not restricted anymore. And now he's open to go wherever, but we see guys go late into the summer and still get paid. Like I've talked about this before, like Miles Plumlee just got $50 million.
Right. Tristan Thompson didn't sign until September last year. His situation was different, but
Eric Bledsoe went really late, and he's a Rich Paul guy too. But you know, Cantor went till mid July. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen guys go long. Somebody else I forget. Oh, Pekovic, right, went until August,
right.
And he got 5 for $60, which now is like when you pay a backup center. But when Pekovic got it, was like a really big deal for Nikola Pekovic. So going late into the summer, sometimes it means the market has died down for you, but going late into the summer is not necessarily mean the market has automatically died down. You're not going to get paid. Like, I still think he could get in that like 8 to 12 a year range.
He's still 24 years old, and he's still clearly got some ability. I mean, we're talking about a player that was playing 30 plus minutes in game 7 of the Western Conference Finals here. So, you know, this guy was an important piece, in one of the three best teams in the NBA last season. So, I think that's what teams are asking themselves. And so, you know, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, I'll ask you, Fred, if you're the 76ers and you sign Deion Waiters and he's your starting shooting guard and he's going to play 32 minutes a night, what kind of production are you expecting out of him next year? What does his numbers look like?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, man. I don't know, because here's my thing. If I'm like the Sixers, and here's why I think I understand the reservations that Brooklyn and Philadelphia might have. When Deion Waiters is playing next to, or at least with, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka, it makes sense why his shot selection would be toned down. It's not just his shot selection; his total shooting was toned down this year. Like his usage plummeted to actually bullet. People think of him as a gunner still, but and he still takes, you know, shots that aren't the greatest shots.
He played his role beautifully. I think the narrative about Deion Waiters should have died in the second half of last year. If you look at his box scores and game logs and his shot locations, the guy was as disciplined, I feel like, a bench player as you could expect him to be.
Well, his usage rate was down to like 17-ish%, which is, you know, if there are five players on the court, there's 100% of shots going around, your average usage rate is 20%. He had a below average usage rate last year, which means he was shooting less than the average, you know, player at his position really would be, which is not something that you'd really equate with Deion Waiters. Like, when he was in Cleveland, it was up in like 26-ish%, which is a ginormous dive. So that kind of fell off this year with Billy Donovan, and it dropped off a little bit when he came to Oklahoma City, though not as drastically last year. But I just wonder, it's theoretically, it's easier for a transition like that to happen from a shooting less perspective and from a taking, you know, better, higher percentage shots perspective. It's easier for that to happen when you're playing with guys like Durant, Westbrook, and that kind of stuff. And when you're in Philly, I understand why a team might worry about him falling back into old habits, which is something that he, you know, had done for years.
You're playing alongside Ish Smith and, you know, Rashawn Holmes or whoever, and now it's like, and Deion Waiters is looking around on the floor and saying, how are we scoring points? Well, I'll score points. So, you know, right. I think, you know, because Deion Waiters, one of the things that he did that was really underrated, I thought, and you can go look up the numbers, that I believe he pretty far and away generated the second most catch and shoot three-pointers on the Thunder roster last season behind Russell Westbrook. I think it was like 3.5 a game. So, like, he was a very, very good shot creator, especially a high-efficiency shot creator for other players. Now, I think that – And that's really the crux of this whole thing, right? Is that which guy is he going to be? Which guy is he going to be for Philadelphia or Brooklyn or whoever? Is he going to be that kind of guy that's disciplined, that's not taking those mid-range early clock twos? Is he going to be downhill Deion, and is he going to get to the basket and try to draw and kick? Or, like you said, Fred, is he going to survey the teammates that he has? Because here's the thing that I think people don't talk about enough is when you're a team like the 76ers or the Nets or whoever – you're an NBA team. You're going to score 90 points, okay? Somebody's got to score those 90 points. So that's like when people are talking about, like, look at Ish Smith's numbers last season. Look at this guy's numbers. Somebody's got to score the points. Somebody's got to get the assists. It's not like the Philadelphia 76ers are going to end the game with 41 points. So somebody's got to do it. It's about how they're scoring them, what's the efficiency standard that they're getting to. And I feel like that I'm sure there will be a temptation for Deion Waiters to look at that and think, I could be a 25-point-a-night kind of guy if I just get my touches and my shots up. So I'm sure that's the concern.
Yeah, for sure. And now that he's unrestricted, maybe it's a take a one-year deal thing if it's possible. Though I don't know if that's a route that I would go if I were Deion Waiters. I feel like someone who takes the one-year deal should be someone who has a history of more consistency, but that's a strategy some people have suggested, and maybe he goes somewhere like that and boosts his numbers and becomes a free agent again in 2017.
If I was his agent, I would be – I mean, I know that for the most part, a lot of the contenders have kind of, you know, spent their budget for the most part. But if I was his agent, I would be trying to get him on a team where – especially if it was going to be a one-year deal, where he could again try to validate himself in the way that he kind of did with the Thunder. Because if he could prove it again, and he was playing with other players that weren't Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, because that's what Deion Waiters is asking himself right now. Where does my career go? What kind of player am I going to be? Because every player's got to realize that, you know, what was he, the fourth overall pick, I think? So, I think that every player's kind of got to have that come to Jesus moment where it's like, okay, who am I as a player? I'm not going to be the perennial all-star that I thought I was when I was coming out of Syracuse. I've got to kind of accept who I am. That's something, you know, I remember Nick Collison wrote about that for GQ, about the art of being a role player and how it's basically just a lot of it is just acceptance of who you are and what your job is going to be. And, you know, Dion Waiters might be thinking, I want to make my money, but you can make a lot more money if you just stay in the NBA for an extended period of time. And that's probably what his future is going to be.
That was a really good Nick Collison article. I remember reading that.
Yeah.
That was Nick really Collison. Good.
He's a great American. Shouts out to Nick Collison.
Yeah, Dion Waiters, man, he still might be the second best Syracuse player currently in the NBA.
Yeah, I know. I think you brought that up last time, which is just mind blowing.
Yeah,
and that Syracuse does not have a for being such a storied basketball program, the turning pro prospect aspect of that program, not a stellar record there.
No, I mean, think of the reason. I mean, there's obviously Melo, but then there's Waiters, there's Michael Carter Williams, there's Wes Johnson. I think that's it. Like, Johnny Flynn's out.
Jerry McNamara, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'm just talking about guys currently in the NBA.
I know. That's what McNamara. I thought he was a starter for somebody because that's just. I remember Jerry McNamara, man. That guy drove me. Or what was it? Divendorf. I hated that guy. Oh my god.
I know Eric Divendorf. Eric Divendorf, man. I have so many stories about Eric Divendorf that I can't tell on this podcast.
He's just one of those guys that you like literally looked at him and you're like, hate that guy.
Like, Eric Divendorf and I got along well, but Eric got into his fair share of mishaps, we'll call them.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, for sure. But like, there are not any, there are like no solid Syracuse alums. I mean, there are those four guys. Johnny's out. Andy Routin's out of the league after a year. I mean, granted, Andy was a second round pick. Who
former Oklahoma City Thunder summer league great Andy.
Yes, Wright. and former he played at Tulsa as well.
Yeah, he's like a mix of a J.E. Skeets / Steve Nash lookalike. I've always thought that about Andy.
He's got like the faux hawk.
Yeah,
he's always got the faux hawk.
He was on a flight with me years ago when he was coming into Oklahoma City either for a tryout. I think it was for his college workout, and I remember talking to him. He was a very nice young man.
Andy is a great guy. I really like Andy Routins. Let me ask you one more Dion Waiters question. We'll move on from Waiters. Just to refresh your memory or everybody else's memory, Thunder, when they acquired him, gave up a 2016 first round pick and Lance Thomas in that 3-team deal that came for Waiters back in January of 2015. Assuming Waiters is gone, how do we view that trade now?
It's so difficult to, I feel like, evaluate that one because that deal was made within the function of the team building with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. And so it's like there are two different eras now that we have to almost evaluate these type of moves. Because if it's about if Kevin Durant re-signs, to me that's still a tremendous trade because for what little the Thunder gave up, and they got a guy, and I know that there's still Waiters is still a polarizing guy, but the Thunder really truly gave up very little because, you know, if you're talking about a late first round draft pick, which is what they typically would have, you know, you're not adding to your team. You're not adding to your rotation, at least, especially, in the immediate future with those type of picks. So, you know, it's like you're trying to find it. I guarantee you what they would be saying. You need to find an impact player with the 24th overall pick. You need to find an impact player with that. Well, Dion Waiters was an impact player. And I know that Lance Thomas has turned into a fairly decent role player for the New York Knicks. But that's such an unexpected thing. That I don't think that you could necessarily evaluate the fact that the Thunder gave him up. Because Lance Thomas, at the time that the Thunder traded him, literally made the team only by the function of there were so many injuries. He was a training camp invite. They liked his work ethic. They thought he played hard. But he only stayed on the team just because everybody was hurt. So I think that as we look back on that trade, I still think it was an excellent deal for the Thunder. But now you look at it, like you said, Fred, with the likelihood that Dion Waiters moves on, giving up a first round pick for a guy that you only got for basically a season and a half, that doesn't feel as good.
Yeah, I'm not quite as high on it as you, but I think it's fine. Like, it's fine in retrospect. I think you also have to look at that in conjunction with the Reggie Jackson deal as well, because Dion was kind of supposed to come in and and kind of be that Reggie Jackson role.
Right.
You know, different type of player, obviously, different caliber of player. But, you know, Reggie Jackson was never going to stay on the Thunder. I think everybody knows that. And that was a trade that had to be made. And the Dion Waiters trade was kind of being made, you know, as a tangential one to that one. So I think that's kind of how you have to view it as well. Right. It's fine. I mean, honestly, I think giving up Thomas is the bigger part of that deal than giving up.
Especially because he's turned out to be a solid role player.
He's really good. He's good. I was surprised that he only got $6 million this offseason.
Hey, guess what? Guess who'd be the Thunder starting small forward if they hadn't made this trade?
Yeah.
It'd be Lance Thomas. So.
It would be Lance Thomas.
Maybe that trade is not that good now in hindsight.
Yeah, Lance Thomas had a really good year this past year because he guards
turned into a three-point shooter.
And guards multiple positions above average. He's good. He's good. He's switchy. Like he's good because he fits very well on a modern day switchy defense.
Right.
And he's still, I mean, he's not gonna run off screens or anything like that, but he, you know, will catch and shoot and that's what his feet set and that's fine enough. Like he's a solid seventh, eighth man. Speaking of a guy who got $6 million, how's that for a segue?
That was beautiful. That was professionally done.
Let's talk about Alex Abrines.
Yeah,
Gilbert Abrines.
That cracks me up.
Yeah,
it's gonna make me laugh all season long.
You're gonna
slip up and call him that. Is what's gonna happen.
You think my next me calling Kevin Fred is going to be calling him Gilbert?
Yes, you're going to call him Gilbert. That's for sure going to happen. It's going to get stuck in your head, and when he gets introduced, you're going to say Fred Katz Norman transcript Gilbert. I mean Alex. yeah, that's happening.
Seems likely. Okay, Thunder. If you don't know who he is, Thunder signed 22-year-old wing to a three-year deal this past week. He's been playing the last few years after the Thunder drafted him in the second round of the 2013 draft. He's been playing the past few years in Spain and Barcelona. So give me a hot take on Abrines.
Well, clearly
your hottest Abrines take.
The Thunder have now won the James Harden trade. How's that?
That's a good Abrines hot take.
That's as hot as, or I guess you could have gone scorching hot, which is like, surface of the sun hot and say, it's a blessing in disguise that Kevin Durant has now left because it's opened the door to sign Alex Abrines.
I actually think the Thunder have now won the James Harden trade is hotter than that.
Is that hotter? Okay.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a good one. So Thunder got that that second round pick that they drafted Abrines with. That was from Houston in the James Harden deal.
We can close the book on it now too.
Yes.
Like that's it. Like that's the final piece right there. Now that's it.
Yes. Is he the final piece? I was discussing this with someone on Twitter the other day. Is he the final piece because he didn't sign till now? Or was Mitch McGarry the final piece because he was the last guy who was drafted?
I think that Abrines is the final piece just because there was always a question whether or not he was going to end up in a Thunder uniform. But here's the thing. Well, if we're talking about the James Harden trade and completing it, because you know, the thing is with drafting Abrines, now you actually have a physical player. But if you can't sit there and use that necessarily to say in retrospect, look, the Thunder made a great move trading James Harden, because nobody's counting a second round pick. That's a throw-in. I mean, that even though it was a high level second round pick and, you know, an early 30s pick, which is a nice second round pick to have, especially when you're taking an international player. But like nobody's like checking the box there and going, oh man. And you know, the Thunder got a second rounder for Harden as well. So like if Abrines turns out to be a really nice NBA player, then we're going to look back on it and we're going to say, okay, here's all the pieces that they ended up getting, and those are the assets that they were able to acquire. But let's not kid ourselves and act like that. Like the Thunder have now, if Abrines turns out to be a great player, that the Thunder somehow won that trade.
You know, I'm going to take your point one step further, and I'm going to say it bothers me the way that we retroactively decide whether trades are good or bad by who was drafted and the picks that were sent.
I agree. Even though Steven Adams makes that trade look good.
Right. He makes it look good, but that's just cosmetic. Cosmetic. Yeah, it's cosmetic. They're different things. Like the way you evaluate a trade is by what the expected value for that pick was when the team acquired it. Because they didn't know that Steven Adams was going to be available then, and they didn't know that Steven Adams was going to be their pick. And as much as they may have liked Steven Adams, they didn't know that Steven Adams was going to be this. They knew the expected value for that pick when they received it. Right. They knew the expected value for the Abrines pick and for the McGarry pick when they received it. And because Mitch McGarry so far hasn't really worked out as a pick, you can't knock them for that. And because Steven Adams has played so much better than being the 12th pick in the draft, you can't praise them for that. You can praise them.
They just wanted assets. That's all they wanted. They wanted assets, and then that's And then when you use those, that's what you where you can get.
Right. You can praise them for the drafting of Steven Adams, which is obviously a great pick and a very high value. And he exceeded that expected value. But we're talking about two different things. So it always kind of bothers me when we talk about, you know, a player becoming, it's like, oh, he saved the trade. No, the trade is, it's done. It's dead. Yeah. It's sunk cost.
Here's the thing too, Fred, is that the Thunder kind of got screwed on that pick too, because it was supposed to be higher. I think it was a Raptors pick, a Raptors own pick, is, you know, via Houston. And the anticipation was when they got that, that it was going to be a high lottery pick, like, you know, top eight, top six. And I think that if I remember right, them getting 12th was like, oh man, that's not near as good as it was supposed to be. So like, if we're talking about that, and if, let's say it ended up six, they're probably not taking Steven Adams. Maybe they can sit back and they can retroactively say, oh yeah, no, we had him earmarked. He was our guy all along. But they're probably not taking him. They're taking somebody else. So now if they take Alex Lynn or whoever that was during that draft, you know, now what's the perception of it? So I completely agree. It's the trade itself. You evaluate it. I think, you can look it back on the whole picture of it, but for the most part, you're just saying, here are the assets the Thunder got. Now, Jeremy Lamb didn't work out. 1 year, Kevin Martin, it made sense, but it didn't necessarily work out because they weren't able to keep him. So in terms of an overall haul, you can look at the big picture of it, but in retroactively turning it into, oh man, Steven Adams, the Thunder got a great, really won that trade now or whatever, came out good in that trade. That's kind of an unreasonable way to look at it.
What do you actually think of Abrines? Like what should let me rephrase this, because we know what his skills are, right? He's catch and shoot. He's not the greatest athlete in Europe. His shooting numbers across the board are awesome. Like if you look at his breakdown of his shooting, catch and shoot, running off screens, even like shooting out of the pick and roll, all this stuff, his shooting numbers are so good. It's like some of the best and most efficient shooting numbers in all of Europe. And he can run off screens, and he's not really going to create offense for himself or for others, but he's going to be able to shoot from distance, and his athleticism is a concern. And that's basically what everybody will say to you. But what are reasonable expectations for a 22-year-old who's played pro and has played in one of the most competitive leagues in the world? It's not the NBA, and one of the most high-caliber leagues. But what should the expectations be for him coming over on this 3-year, $18 million deal in year one?
Well, I don't want to overstate things too much, Fred, but I'm pretty sure that he's going to be the next Klay Thompson. So that's just what I think. Based on the highlight mixes that I've watched. I do think that the Thunder have now added a player that they really haven't kind of ever had. Now they've had a catch and shoot guy in Anthony Morrow, but Anthony Morrow shoots with his feet in concrete. I mean, Anthony Morrow is not necessarily, you know, running the baseline and catching and curling off screens. And, you know, he's not a constant motion type of shooter. Anthony Morrow is more of a spot up guy. You don't really necessarily run stuff to try to get him open. The Thunder really haven't ever had a guy, I feel like, Abrines, where, you know, other than maybe Kevin Durant, that's like really, you know, running off screen, staying in constant motion, making defenses kind of pull and sway to him. And assuming Russell Westbrook stays, that, you know, Alex Abrines probably walks in, you know, other than Anthony Morrow, and he's probably the best shooter on the team outside of Anthony Morrow. So, and you look at this Thunder roster, and the Thunder are in desperate need of shooting. They lose Kevin Durant, who was their best shooter, and they lose Serge Ibaka, who's probably, in terms of their, you know, playing time, their second best shooter. So they are in desperate need of floor spacing. They need shooters. And so I think Abrines is going to play, and I think he's going to be valuable. The question is, as everybody knows, can he defend at the NBA level? And, you know, once teams start kind of keying on him and isolating on him, how is he going to hold up in terms of, you know, can he still get open? Can he, you know, get separation running off screens and finding a way to shoot? Because I think it's just a pure skill set guy. I think he's got NBA level, NBA ready talent. I think he really does. But you know, how valuable can you really be on the floor if you're not, you know, if teams are picking on you, on the defensive end?
And let's not forget, I know he's not the greatest shooter, but he does take threes. He took 240 of them. They're also losing Dion Waiters.
So right.
One of the things that they're going to need is they're going to need to be able to the struggle for them is also going to be to create threes.
Right.
It's not just taking threes. Like people,
it's going to be there's going to be a lot of I think Cameron Payne is going to be very important to them next season, because Russell Westbrook can't be the only guy doing it. And they've obviously got Victor Oladipo, and so he kind of made Dion Waiters redundant in some ways. But like you're saying, Fred, you know, they can't just put it on two guys to say, you got to create every shot out there for us, because that's over an 82 game schedule. There's nothing in basketball. If you people out there have played pickup basketball, nothing tires you out more than playing with the ball in your hands. It is the most exhausting thing that you can do, I think, is constantly attacking with the ball in your hands. So if you're asking Russell Westbrook to do that basically all on his own for the entire season, you're asking way too much of him.
Yeah, for sure. And Russell Westbrook had a really good year creating threes this past year. I feel like, I mean, I wrote about this earlier this week. I feel like, you know, he almost needs to take on somewhat of like a James Harden type role. What Harden's role was in Houston this past year, just being able to, I mean, Harden, I think, creates three-point shots and catch and shoot open threes as well as any other player in the league.
Absolutely.
And I think Russ is, you know, people accuse him of over-dribbling. But James Harden's assists, his average assists are more valuable than your average assists, because James Harden creates more threes per assist than pretty much any other player in the league. Other guys are creating more twos, and he's creating shots that are worth more. So that's a big deal with Harden. I think Russ, I think he's 100% capable of doing it, and I actually think he probably will do it, but it's something that he's got to do, and I think you bring up a really good point in Payne having to do that as well. But another way to create threes, and I'm going to come back to a point that you just made, another way to create threes is not just creating threes with the ball. You can create threes off the ball. And yeah, I'm not necessarily even talking about how Abrinas can create threes for himself when he runs off screens and you know runs off a pin down and curls up to the top and ends up creating a catch and shoot three for himself. Yeah, that's something you can do. But when you have a guy who moves and runs, I mean, Anthony Morrow creates spacing and he pulls guys out to the wing,
right,
and that creates room. But when you have a guy who moves and runs off screens and moves within the offense, part of what is so effective about, say, a pick and roll or setting an off ball screen even in an offense is that you're making the defense communicate. The more decisions that you make a defense make throughout an offensive possession, you're giving them more opportunities to make a mistake. And the more guy, if you have a guy, one of the reasons like the Clippers offense is so good is because JJ Redick is just like the Energizer Bunny.
Right.
And he's running off 49 pin downs.
He's sprinting.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the dude never gets tired. And he's just, in my opinion, he's the best at moving off the ball in the entire league. And he's just running off a gazillion, he's running off a gazillion off ball screens. And guys will make mistakes. As good as an NBA defense is, guys will make mistakes. They'll mess up a switch, or they'll run into a good screen, or two guys will follow, you know, Redick when they're not supposed to, or no one will follow Redick when one guy is supposed to, or whatever it is. Somebody makes a mistake. And if you have Abrinas, who's pretty good at that, that just creates another way for somebody to make a mistake, and all of a sudden, you know, Steven Adams is left open, or you've got Ilyasova left open on the wing for threes. And that's a way that you can create open shots without the ball too, and a way that moving off the ball can really help in offense, even if it doesn't help your individual game for that particular play.
And I think that Abrinas is a player that's going to fit well into Billy Donovan's system too. I think that that's something that Thunder kind of tried to figure out throughout last season, and that's something that Sam Presti in the front office were evaluating, especially in the second half of the year when the team was kind of starting to take shape and kind of understand how they were playing. I think that Presti was then starting to look at like, okay, what's the personnel that we need to fit this type of style that we're playing? Because yes, and you mentioned it on Twitter the other day, Fred, which and shouts out to you on this. Passes per game don't mean anything really in terms of like your offensive movement, because that you know, if the Thunder wanted to up those passes per game, okay, then run two dribble handoffs at the beginning of every set, pass the ball around the perimeter, and then get into your set. Like the Thunder, like their offense is very straight line. They score a lot in transition, and you know, sometimes that they get great offense off of 1 to 3 passes. And that doesn't mean it's bad offense. That means they're getting a great shot, and that's the goal of offense. So I think though, but there's no question that the Thunder improved on their player movement and their ball movement last season. They moved the ball more side to side. They generated far more corner threes than they ever have. The efficiency in terms of the shots that they got were far and away different than what they got in years previous. Now, how is that going to change now with that number 35 guy gone? Because that offense was entirely shaped around him. That's a big question, obviously. But I do think that Presti is looking for players that are going to fit this type of style and system that Billy Donovan's running. And I think Abrinas is the type of player that's going to fit it well.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I think also, like, when people talk about the number of passes in the Thunder offense, look, this was the most efficient offense the NBA has seen in like 4 years, non-Warriors offense that the NBA has seen in like 4 or 5 years. In terms of just points,
right,
per possession, they averaged almost barely under 110 points per 100 possessions, which is a crazy number. I mean, it was second in the league to the Warriors. The Warriors had the highest one since the merger, I think, this year. So that's an unbelievable number. It's a number that would lead the league in pretty much any year. In a normal year, that number is going to lead the league. In a normal year, the Thunder have the best offense in the league this year. So I think we have this kind of cookie-cutter way of what an offense is supposed to look like, and it's just not true. And, like, during the spring, maybe I'm calling out particular media people right now, but, like, during or I'm about to, but, like, during the Spurs series, for example, against the Thunder, I heard so many questions from people about, like, you know, like, well, you know, the Spurs are, you know, look at how they're playing. They're posting up, and they're – we're not seeing that Spurs-like ball movement. This team won 67 games. You're not watching them all year. It's how they've been playing for the last 82 games plus the playoffs. Like, this is how they play now. It's not because Greg Popovich thought that the best way to play was the way he was playing before. And did you not watch the Spurs the first, like, 12 years of the Tim Duncan era when they would just back guys down? Or at least the first, like, 6 or 7 when they would back guys down and run their offense through, you know, early on in Tim Duncan's career, they'd run the offense through Duncan and through David Robinson and – then Tony Parker came and they kind of switched things, and Parker and Manu kind of switched into their prime, and they started running a pick and roll heavy offense with some D'Antoni principles in there. And now they've got different personnel and they're running it differently. Like, there's not, and the Spurs, if you look at their in terms of their shot breakdowns, they had a great offense this year. They were a top five offense, but in terms of their shot breakdowns, like, you wouldn't look at their shot breakdowns in terms of where they're taking their shots from and think that they have a good offense based on the cookie-cutter way that we believe that offense should be now. Like, they were – I think they took the most mid-range shots in the league or the second most mid-range shots in the league or something like that. They were in the bottom half of the league in three-point attempts. I mean, this is an offense that figured out how to make it work using generally inefficient shots because they turned them into efficient shots with their personnel and the types of looks they were getting. And just looking at the – you've sent me on a rant now, but just looking –
no, go rant.
Looking at – they didn't pass the ball a lot is just a little bit of a it's so simplistic. It's such a simplistic way to do it. Thunder had a really good offense last year.
Here's the problem though, Fred. There's a certain guy that bought into that narrative, and I know that for a fact. And he's no longer with the team. And he bought into this idea of beautiful basketball and the basketball ballet that the Spurs and the Warriors have, you know, the Spurs used to play and now the Warriors play. And so, like, this idea that
that's are you talking about Dion Waiters?
Yes, I'm talking about Dion Waiters, and that's and that's why he's no longer going to be with the team. No, I was talking about Randy Foy. but that is 100% accurate that, you know, that type of mentality gets into people's head. And which to me, one thing that as you were saying that I wanted to mention, I remember Kevin Durant standing in New York and he was kind of asked about it. And he himself gave an amazing answer talking about, he's saying, like, we're not the Spurs. You know, we're not that type of team. We're not the Warriors that, you know, pass to get into our offense. We've got players that can attack you off the dribble and break down defenses and generate shots. We play differently because of the players that we have. And at the time, it sounded like Kevin Durant, you know, that he was very proud of that fact, and that's the kind of team that he, you know, had completely bought into, is that he, you know, that they were different, but that didn't mean that they were doing it wrong. But apparently, you know, he felt differently a couple weeks ago.
No, we almost made it the whole way.
I know, I'm sorry.
We almost made it the whole way without talking about Kevin Durant.
Sorry.
We came so close. We talked about Alex Abrines, and we didn't talk about Kevin
Andy Routens, for crying out loud.
We talked about Andy, but now we didn't talk about Andy Routens more than we talked about Kevin Durant. We talked about Kevin Durant more than Andy Routens now. Although maybe this puts us over the top of our Andy Routens quota.
Yeah, let's all share our favorite Andy Routens memory.
I have a lot of Andy Routens memories.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah,
Should I start just talking about OU basketball players? Let me tell you about Quanis White, the big shot that he hit against Kansas State.
I have tons of Andy Routens memories. Andy Routens had a great senior year. He was really good. Great shooter, Andy Routens.
Yes, he was a very good shooter.
I thought he had a little bit of
an NBA future to him, you know, just but obviously he didn't.
Yeah, well, because he was pretty good at moving off the ball too. And so I thought, like, he could have that role. He couldn't defend, and I think he was too small, and they wanted to play him a point guard, and that was not something he could do. Right. All right, before we go, any big plans once kind of free agency dies down and Dion Waiters makes a decision and we kind of hit, you know, that 1 month off where we're kind of chilling?
I got plans, man. I got big plans. Family is headed to Disney World.
Wow.
Late August, early September. Very excited.
Really, that's a big deal. Wait. So you're going to California or Florida?
Florida. Disney World, yeah.
That's going to be fun.
No, it's we've been once before. I went. We went last year. Now, Carrie, my wife, she's been a lot because she used to be a cheerleader, and they do like their like competitions and stuff in Orlando a lot. But last year was my first time to ever go, and we took at the time our 10-month-old. And the reason we were there is like I was there at Summer League, and it was like, all right, let's just bring the family with us. It kind of turned into like a half work, half, you know, vacation type of deal. And it was fun, but like this time we're going as full vacation. Harrison's going to be over 2 years old, and he's going to have, you know, he is so into Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse right now, and we cannot wait to see it. That's really what it's less about like the fun that you have personally, and it's more about the fun that you watch your kid have. And so we're like really excited about that. And I know some people are like, oh, he's too young, he'll never remember it. I don't care. I'm going to remember it. I'm going to remember him sitting there and laughing his little head off when he sees Mickey Mouse. And that's all that really matters to me. It's worth every penny just for that.
You can take pictures. He'll see it one day.
I will take pictures and say, look, man, you were there and you had a great time. And so we cannot wait. We are very excited. Here, the other thing about it is, Fred, planning for Disney is almost more fun than actually going to Disney.
Because what goes into the planning?
You're making your dinner reservations at all the different parks. There's these things called fast passes where you like can pick like certain. You get 3 fast passes per day, and you're picking out like which rides or which like things you want to use your fast passes on, and you're planning like, okay, are we going to Animal Kingdom this day? There's just different things like that. Just makes it – just thinking about Disney is just fun.
You are so excited right now.
I'm so excited. Disney World is amazing. And I'm not just saying that as a Disney employee.
Yeah, what a company man right now.
Disney is awesome.
What a company man. I guess there's a reason you're not going to Universal and you're going to Disney World.
Well, we went to Universal last year. I had to get my Harry Potter books.
I'll cut that part out of the podcast then.
Please do.
Anything you want to plug, Twitter handle, before you go?
Please, I would like to plug my favorite Twitter handle at Fred Katz and Fred Katz of Norman Transcript and Fred Katz Locked On Podcast. That's the things I like to plug.
Do you think my Twitter handle is at Fred Katz Norman Transcript?
No, I was saying at Fred Katz and then Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript.
That would be such a wordy.
That'd be a great Twitter handle. At Fred Katz Norman Transcript.com, Thunder Rider, Fred Katz Thunder Road.
That's a really, really bad Twitter handle.
You have two characters left to send your tweet.
I might have to take that just so nobody else does. Before we head out, remember you can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. You can follow Royce. What are you, at Royce Young?
That's right. Pretty simple.
There you go. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, like Royce said, at Fred Katz, F-R-E-D.
At Fred Katz, at FredKatz.com.
Yeah, you can find me at Fred Katz or at Fred Katz Norman Transcript in about a minute because I'm about to steal that Twitter handle. Log on to NormanTranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. Off for the weekend, back again on Monday. Have a few good guests coming next week, hopefully. And until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.